Kartik Krishnaiyer. Let's go into our preview of the 2022-23 Premier League season. I don't know about you, Kartik, but this has been a long summer. Yes, we've watched the Women's Euros. We've watched MLS games, Brazil Aero games, Copa America Femenina, like a whole bunch of different things. But usually in the summertime, we always have a men's tournament that we can look forward to, whether it's the Euros or the World Cup, which it should have been this year, or some other major tournament, Gold Cup, etc. So without a major men's tournament, it's felt different. It's felt longer. But having said that, though, too, here we are. We're getting ready to go into the new season. We will go through all 20 teams in the Premier League and give you our analysis and thoughts about these teams. But before we start that, I do want to mention a couple of things. First of all, is that we're evolving the podcast. We're still going to be talking about the media business, but we're also going to be talking more about the games. So this is a perfect example of that, too, where we're talking about the games, the teams, the players, the actual football itself, the soccer itself. Now, Kartik, before we start up in talking about the previews, any kind of big thoughts about this Premier League season? Is this one going to be any different than previous ones in your estimation?
It very well could be. I think we're looking at a situation where this league is evolving all the time, right? It's getting better and better all the time in terms of its the bottom of the table becoming maybe more competitive with the top.
I think the other thing, though, too, tied with that is the popularity of this league. It just seems that it's everywhere. It just seems that, no matter where you go, you see people wearing Premier League shirts of Premier League clubs. It just seems that you can have a conversation pretty much with anyone in this country that's into soccer, and the first thing they mention is the Premier League, which it wasn't always that way. The success of Ted Lasso is one example. That has really kind of gotten the Premier League more into the minds of mainstream America. Now they may not be watching Premier League games at all, but I think a lot of this comes back to NBC Sports and the fantastic job that they've done in terms of more so accessibility. I think in terms of a proven formula that does work. And at the same time, though, too, at the end of the day, for the most part, the Premier League delivers in terms of, any weekend going into any weekend in the European season, and some people outside of the Premier League get upset and frustrated because no matter what happens in other leagues around the world, some top leagues, it seems that everyone's talking about the Premier League. And I think, Kartik, you've noticed this too, right? Where, there's two games on at once, but all of the attention, all of the focus, especially on social media, that's where you see it most, is focused on that one Premier League game instead of the other leagues.
Yeah, and it's created this sort of weird hostility, right, to the Premier League, and this sort of defensiveness from people who put other leagues first or prefer other leagues. And I think it's all down to personal preferences. But the other aspect of this, I think, is really important, Chris, is that I'm seeing more and more fans of Serie A. That seems to be the league, Serie A and La Liga. Those seem to be the two leagues in particular where you see this more than the Bundesliga or Liga 1. Really trying to poke holes in any sort of promotion of the Premier League or English football, to the point where it's showing a certain degree of insecurity in my estimation. And I've always been in the past someone who felt like perhaps we were too much in this country focused on the Premier League, and there were too many fans of football in this country that weren't looking at the continent for better football, understanding what happened on the continent. I still think that's the case in a lot of areas, but you're seeing some insecurity and defiance on the other end as well.
Yeah, it does seem that the Premier League is a juggernaut. It's one of those things that if you do have a conversation with somebody about soccer, oftentimes it is about the Premier League. And then if you do bring up another league, such as the Bundesliga, you kind of get a lost look, like the person, knows about Bayern but doesn't really pay attention to the league. We love all leagues. We love all soccer. We watch as much soccer as we possibly can. But in a given weekend, there's only so much time. And oftentimes we find ourselves kind of, you know, in terms of the priority list, looking at some of these Premier League games? Because, again, at the end of the day, most of the games deliver. There's, whether it's on the pitch or off the pitch, whether it's a moment of magic, it is entertaining. And it is one of the best leagues in the world in terms of the talent, the big players. And you've seen kind of a shift more to the UK. And we've seen that also, too, in terms of the UEFA Champions League. And just how the English teams seem to dominate that competition, even if ultimately they don't always win it. So let's move on to the Premier League preview and look at that in terms of this upcoming season. The way that we're going to do this is we're going to start near the bottom of the Premier League table based on who we believe will get relegated and then move slowly up the table. Now, Kartik and I have not shared our predictions in terms of who we think will get relegated and who we think will win the title, etc. But Kartik, I want to start with you. I want to get your sense for, if you could start off on the first team first, but which is your team that you think is most likely to get relegated this season and why?
I guess I would say Bournemouth. I think that they were inconsistent in the championship last year. They got back up under Scotty Parker, but they have a somewhat bloated squad. Believe it or not, you know, you're always talking about teams that come up needing to reinforce and enhance their squads. I think in the case of Bournemouth, they've got to shed some players. And there's a mix and match of playing styles in there. There are guys who were inherited from Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall that play a very... Howe had been at the club forever, right? So, and Tindall had been there with him. They both were former Bournemouth players. So guys that played one style of football mixed with some more pragmatic elements. So I think Bournemouth probably needs to shed some players and then sign a few as well. So right now I'm looking at them as potentially being 20th, and that's unfortunate, because I'm glad to have them back up and was disappointed when they went down a few seasons ago. But right now for me, they're the most nailed on team for relegation.
Yeah, I'm with you there too. I don't think they're going to be the bottom place team, but they will be in the bottom three. It's difficult too, because they have a tough test at the beginning of the season. So their first home match is against Aston Villa. But after that one, which Villa's going to be a tough game anyway, but after that, they face Man City, Arsenal, and then Liverpool. So they've got a really difficult first four games there too. And with Bournemouth, I was doing some research ahead of this podcast, and I was looking at their preseason friendlies that they played. They played a camp in Portugal, and they played, I think, Bristol City. So looking at their... They haven't played a lot of kind of high-profile friendlies at all. So there's a lot of question marks about how this Bournemouth team is going to look like. And like you said, Kartik, too, they have so many players, so many depth, a lot of players that they had on loan last year, and a lot of players that have experience in the Championship but don't necessarily have experience at the Premier League level. So I think they're very untested. I do like Keith Amore, who's should be a huge threat up front for the Cherries in terms of a tall player, very physical, very talented, and fantastic in terms of his heading ability, and that will be a good opportunity for Bournemouth. But overall, I'm with you, Kartik. I think this is going to be a really tough season for Bournemouth. So, Kartik, you may disagree on this one. And again, we haven't discussed this previously, but the other team that I think is going to be in huge trouble, this is the team that I predict will be bottom of the table. Now, having said that, for both Kartik and I, we're doing this podcast previews at the end of July, and the transfer window is still going to be open until September. There's a lot that can change in the first weeks of the seasons, and it's quite possible too that a lot of our predictions will be way off, because a club can bring in a whole bunch of people coming in. The team that I think is currently dead set to finish bottom of this table is Everton. Everton, a team that by a hair stayed up in the Premier League last season, and this is a club that desperately needs new ownership, new investment to come in to really turn this club around. In the last 3 years, the club has lost $450 million. A lot of that was some really poor signings. A lot of that was some really a lack of really kind of a really kind of set director of football, somebody that had a vision for this club, and they've made countless mistakes. So they're really in a hole financially, and I mean, if a new investor does come in and starts to spend tens of millions of dollars, or you know, some big players to bring in, then there's an opportunity that Everton can turn around and escape the drop. But the later that happens, the harder it's going to be for Everton. I think they're in trouble, Kartik, and I have confidence in Frank Lampard in terms of a coach, but I don't think he's got what it takes to keep this club up this season, especially losing Richarlison.
Yeah, losing Richarlison is a big, big loss. The hope is Dominic Calvert-Lewin can regain some of the fitness and therefore the form he had the previous several years under Carlo Ancelotti and Marco Silva. That's a big if, right? I mean, Calvert-Lewin looked really off the pace even when he was fit last season. So that's I think a pretty big deal replacing Richarlison. Obviously, Dwight McNeil has now been signed. Three other notes. I think Anthony Gordon, let's see if he continues to kick on. We know the success Frank Lampard had in developing Mason Mount, a similar player at Derby and at Chelsea. Now, Gordon is nowhere near as good as Mount, but can play in kind of similar roles to Mount. So maybe that's something, or maybe he's more of a Christian Pulisic player. We know Pulisic had better success under Lampard than he has had under Tuchel or Lucien Favre at Borussia Dortmund. So his last three managers, I'd say he did the best with Lampard. I think the Dele Alli situation to me is kind of interesting, right? Does he kick on? Does he become another Frank Lampard, which we thought he was going to be at Spurs, or does he just fade out? And for me, the big... go ahead.
No, I think he's done. I think he's done as... I mean, he's nowhere near the player that he was and is drifting.
Yeah, and the other... I tend to agree. The big thing, the reason why I think Everton might stay up is the signing of James Tarkowski, who I thought would go to a Newcastle or to an Aston Villa or maybe even a top six side. He will bring a certain degree of leadership, grit, and aerial prowess, both defensively and on attacking set pieces that Everton did not have last season. So Tarkowski was signed on a free. I'm surprised he signed with Everton. He's a Mancunian, by the way. So I think he probably wanted to stay in the Northwest. Great success at Burnley. So that might have been the deciding factor. And that could keep Everton maybe 17th. I tend to agree with you. They're going to be 17th or 18th or 16th or 19th, right? They're going to be in that mix. It's just a matter of whether they're above the line or below the line. I think they might just be above it, and it's because of a free, because of Tarkowski.
The only positive thing I can say about Everton so far is that the excellent progress they're making at Bramley Moor Dock, which is their new stadium, which is right alongside the Mersey River. It's a fantastic spot. If you're curious, go check out YouTube and type in Bramley Moor Dock. And it's amazing what they've been doing with that stadium. When it is ready, it will look, I wouldn't say world-class, but it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be so much different than the Goodison Park. But who knows, by that point, they might be in the Championship. So we saw last season so much turmoil. We talked about Everton repeatedly.
And I have to say this, maybe I'm too much of a sentimentalist, but financially, this is going to really be a big deal for Everton. And as we said, as you said, they have major financial problems. They've overspent. They've actually, I think their net spend the last several windows has been higher than Liverpool, their cross Stanley Park rival, right? Rival from a mile away, believe it or not. But I fear, much like we've seen with other clubs, that once they leave Goodison, which is just a cauldron, right? It is. Some people got upset on Twitter when I said it's the toughest place for officials to officiate, even in England or potentially in Western Europe, possibly in Western Europe. It's a poison chalice in a way, because I think they're going to lose a lot of that when they move to the new ground, as beautiful as it will be and as much as it will enhance the revenues of the club.
All right, Kartik, moving slightly up this Premier League table predictions. What's the next team that you think will be in trouble near the bottom or at the bottom?
I hate to do this, and I know this is going to set off alarm bells and anger with a lot of American fans. Let me preface this by saying, when the U.S. job was open, U.S. men's national team job was open in 2017 and 2018, I even tweeted and said publicly on some radio shows there should be one candidate. They only need to interview one guy, and that's Jesse Marsh. I still believe that, but I just think Leeds is in all sorts of problems potentially because they have lost their two best players in Rafinha and Calvin Phillips without really adequate replacements being bought. No offense to Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson, just not at that same level. And I'm not confident Patrick Bamford's going to make it through the season. Fitness is an issue for him. And Chris, hate to tell you this because obviously he's a key to Wales's hopes in November, but I don't think Dan James quite has the game to play up top. And even when he's played in other positions last season, played wide, I felt like he was missing something. He wasn't quite the player I expected. Maybe it was a tough move and bad circumstance. Maybe he'll be better this season, but I'm concerned about Leeds.
Yeah, Dan James, I think has always been missing that final touch. That you mean, he gets in the right positions, he has the speed, he beats the player, but then that last kick, you mean, whether it's a shot on goal, a one-on-one, or a pass, whatever it may be, often fails him. And maybe there's an opportunity here for him to, you mean, work on that and make that the killer kind of touch that he needs going into a World Cup where he's going to be on fire. We'll see. I think it's down to him more than anyone. But with Leeds, though, I mean, Kartik, you're right. I mean, in terms of the amount of pressure that is going to be on the shoulders of not just Jesse Marsh, but also Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson, where they are expected to really carry the weight, to really kind of keep this team with just such a huge, massive fan base that's so passionate. The Leeds fans will be on their side, but it is hugely important that this trio, these Americans deliver, because if they don't, you can imagine the type of, you know, negativity in the British press, on social media from Leeds United fans that might get kind of frustrated. They will give them time, but ultimately these guys will either sink or swim. And I think if Leeds go down, a lot of the focus will be on the Americans, in quotation marks, copyright Rob Stone.
Yeah, and I think one of my great concerns about Tyler Adams, I believe he reads the game as well as just about any American player we've seen since Michael Bradley in terms of that central midfield position, I think, general. In fact, when I compared him favorably to Christian Pulisic a couple of years ago, saying, hey, he's a lot smarter as a footballer than Pulisic, I got all kinds of abuse from Americans, right? They didn't want to hear this guy at Leipzig was better than the prodigal son. But I think fitness issues really are a big deal for Adams. And when you go to a more physical situation, potentially more physical situation in the Premier League, with a club that already has had concerns about several players, one of the things that Jesse Marsh inherited last season was a side that was never consistently fit. He could never field the same 11 from match to match. It wasn't just that they were fighting relegation. It was that there is some issue with players they're breaking down. Maybe that gets solved this summer. But I don't believe Tyler Adams can stay fit for a full Premier League season. I think he'll probably miss a third of the season. That's just my guess. So that's my concern there. Brendan Aaronson, I think, is quite good, by the way. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he's Rafinha. Rafinha is an elite, elite player. So you're going from an elite player to a very good player in a relegation fight. Teams that get relegated have several very good players. And Aaronson would be kind of at the top of the list. He wouldn't be the best player to be relegated from the Premier League in recent years. And he certainly, I think, will help them, but I don't think he necessarily is a like-for-like replacement, even in the way he plays.
So I think that Leeds will stay up, Kartik, but the injury part of it will be key. So if they can reduce the number of injuries in the season throughout the course of the season, and it's tough too because these players play at lightning pace. I mean, it's a very physical league. But if they can kind of withstand some of these injuries, and I think they can stay up by a small margin. However, so I agree with you in terms of Bournemouth going down. Everton, I believe, will be rock bottom unless they can get some new ownership in. The other team that I think will get relegated is Fulham. And I hate to say this, I love Fulham. I love Craven Cottage. I love everything about this club in terms of the history, the American owner, what they've done, and also even rebuilding this Riverside stand, which if you haven't seen it yet, it's not going to be fully opened until next summer, but the lower level will be open for this 2022-23 season. And it's just an incredible stand that they've built right on the bank of the River Thames. It looks amazing. Everything about this, the stadium, the history of this club, some of the great players, Jimmy Greaves, George Best, Jimmy Hill, many others, the Americans, the Fulham Americans have played for this club. In the history of the stands, I just love Fulham. However, I don't think they're going to stay up. And again, too, a lot of this comes back to Aleksandar Mitrovic, who's a player that just like bosses the championship, just like scores goals for fun in the championship, and then gets into the Premier League, and then just is so frustrated, is just cannot get his mojo going. And I think it's key that they find the goals out of this player. If they don't, they're going to be in trouble.
First off, Chris, just for American audience, McBride or Dempsey? You can only pick one. Who do you pick?
I think Brian McBride. And I think the reason being, too, you have a pub at Craven Cottage named after McBride. You don't have there's no Dempsey's pub at Craven Cottage, but you do have a McBride pub.
It's a flip of the coin. I think I probably opt for McBride also. And I want to remind listeners this. Everything Brian McBride accomplished at Fulham, he accomplished after he was 30. That's how fit that guy was. That's how driven that guy was. And that's ultimately how good that guy was. So when we have U.S. national team fans comparing 19-year-olds favorably to players like McBride and people telling me, oh, well, Brian McBride never played in the Champions League and player X did, he's better. Please. So yeah, I have a soft spot for Fulham because of McBride, because of Bocanegra, Dempsey, Eddie Lewis, any number of American guys that have played there. And they still have Timmy Ream, who I think, despite getting vilified in the British press, is an important player in that dressing room. And quite frankly, is a player now that the roster is expanded to 26. I know this won't happen. I would take to the World Cup if I'm Greg Berhalter, because you need that leadership. On Fulham, I'm not sure. This is one of the teams in the Premier League this season I have the most question marks about, because I watched them in the Championship last year. They were miles better than anyone else. They were playing different football under Marco Silva. So I don't think we can judge them by their last two trips up. And I know they've been a yo-yo club, and they spent a lot of money. The first time they came up in this recent iteration, obviously they were up for 15 years before that. And went right back down, finished 20th or whatever, 19th or 20th. I do think they're a different side this time. And I do think they've made some interesting moves now lately in the transfer market, which I didn't necessarily expect. It looked like, if anything, they were fizzling out, right? They were going ahead and mailing it in, Tony Khan and Shad Khan. And now we're seeing, I think, very much a situation where you've got a club maybe spending late, but spending, maybe they can get Bernd Leno over the line. We don't know about that yet as we record this. You will know probably when you listen, but they have a couple of interesting moves in the mix. So I'm not sure. And in terms of Mitrovic, I think what happened the last time Fulham was up, Chris, is that Scotty Parker, probably for legitimate reasons, because he felt like they needed a different setup, right? And they needed a different style with the kind of players they had to stay up. So we wanted a side that was really dynamic and moved the ball quickly on counterattacks and used their wide guys very well. I think they may be better off this time. I think Mitrovic might be better. I forgot to mention Anthony Robinson. Obviously, he's a core player for the U.S. I was focusing on Timmy Ream. But Fulham America still exists. Babu Mbabu signed from Wolfsburg is a player I actually like a lot. He dropped off like everybody at Wolfsburg last season, but I think that's kind of a steal, and he's going to be able to complement what Robinson does. What Robinson does on the left, he'll be able to complement on the right side. So again, like Everton, we're looking 16th through 19th, in my opinion, for Fulham. I'm not as down on them as you are, but I do realize it's going to be a struggle. I just think Mitrovic is going to be better this year. Maybe that's one of my big calls, one of my hot takes on this pod. I think Mitrovic is going to be better this year than he's been in his last few Premier League stints, both with Fulham and with Newcastle. I think you've got a system that plays to his strengths, and he will score goals this season.
Yeah, Shahid Khan, the owner, is a little bit conservative in terms of his spending. I think he's looking at this saying, okay, don't overspend. I mean, if we do go down, we've got the parachute payments. We can cash in as much money as we can during the Premier League season. And then next year, we'll have an opportunity to build a strong championship squad to come right back up if needed. So I think he's a sharp businessman, and he's making the right decisions. But with the hope, of course, that Fulham will stay up and be in the Premier League for many, many seasons and build upon that. But hopefully we'll get more than one season from Craven Cottage in the Premier League this go around. So Kartik, so near the bottom, any other clubs that you fear are going to be in the drop zone or just right above it? Who's next?
I think it's probably Brentford, Chris. The overriding issue for me with Brentford is that they lost Christian Eriksen, and I think there's still some very important pieces there. And obviously, Thomas Frank had this team playing great football in the Championship. They've absorbed big losses before, right? They've lost the likes of Ollie Watkins and Benarama, who we'll talk about both those guys, I'm sure, on this podcast with big Premier League sides and Mopay, etc. But I just feel like the lack of transfer activity is going to hurt them this season. Although I have to say, Chris, Ben Mee, former FA Cup youth winner at Manchester City, great player for Burnley. I think a big part of the reason Burnley stayed in the Premier League for so long, that's a really good under-the-radar signing. It's going to bring some veteran leadership, some steel into that dressing room, and I think he'll fit well with what Frank is doing. By the way, he's getting his coaching badges right now as we speak.
Yeah, I think with Brentford too, I mean, they've got a good system in place under the manager, Thomas Frank, in terms of well-organized. They know what their game plan is. But I think part of the challenge they're going to have is that the new stadium bounce will have worn off. And there's also a lot of question marks about whether Ivan Toney will be able to keep on with his goal scoring. But I think, yeah, like you said, Kartik, I really think that losing Christian Eriksen is a huge blow because he was really kind of the playmaker. And whether it's set plays, I mean, free kicks, or just clinical passes, I think Brentford are going to be missing out on that. So I think they will have a much tougher challenge this second season than they did last year. Plus, at the same time, too, I think a lot of teams may have underestimated them a little bit last year. But I think they'll be more well prepared to play against them this season.